We're right in the middle of a series called Christianity for People Who Aren't Christians. It's based off of a book by author James Emery White. It's a great book. I would encourage you to pick up a copy if that's something that you are interested in. We're currently in week three of this series. If you've missed any of the series, you can go to our website, betheloonline.ca, and you can hear the sermons there. Have you ever heard an ad so annoying that it turned you off from the business entirely? I mean, most ads are annoying at the best of times. People don't usually like ads, unless, of course, it's during the Super Bowl commercial, and then they specifically go out of their way to watch ads. But there are some commercials that just stand out above the rest as being annoying. There are some jingles and some voices that will just haunt your dreams forever. A&W aired a series of ads last year where they had real people taste their hamburgers. And the funny thing about this commercial is how shocked and amazed all of the people who ate the hamburgers were that the food actually tasted good. Now, I don't know, I'm not a marketing expert, okay? But I feel like it's just not a good strategy to have people surprised by the fact that your food is edible and that it tastes good. One of the ads actually ended with a girl saying, "You really just gotta sit with those flavors." Like, what? Like, who says that? And it's just, I don't understand. It just, something about that just really, it just rubs me the wrong way. Now, don't get me wrong. I actually love A&W. I think, out of the major fast food chains in Canada, they probably do have the best burger. The root beer is the only root beer that I will drink, and that's just my humble opinion there. But when those ads aired, I could just not change the channel fast enough. You know, the whole point of advertisement is to make people want your product. But some advertising campaigns are so bad and so poorly executed that they actually have the opposite effect. In 2017, you might remember this, Pepsi aired an ad in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. It had Kendall Jenner leading the movement with a can of Pepsi. Well, it took less than 24 hours for Pepsi to realize that they had immediately made a very grave decision. Many people felt like they were making light of such a serious issue. Many people thought that they were trying to make a profit off of this and leverage it for their own good. A poll after this ad came out showed that 25% of people were less likely to buy Pepsi after the ad aired than before. They just got completely destroyed on the internet. Tons of negative tweets and Facebook posts and comments. Right? Ads have the power to either make you want a product, to make you buy into something, or they have the power to do the complete opposite, to completely turn us off from whatever they're trying to sell. In the same way, this is one of the great challenges of Christianity. Most of the bad press that Christians get comes from, well, Christians. There are all kinds of walking, talking ads of the Christian faith that are turning people off from faith and away from Jesus. The type of people I'm talking about are people who claim to be Christians. And they may even be very vocal about their faith. They may talk about it a lot. But they come across as legalistic, hypocritical, judgmental, or just plain intolerant. And for a few very blessed individuals, they come across as all of the above. And sadly, Christians or people who claim to be Christians are one of the biggest barriers that trip up people who are curious about faith. And since we're in a serious Christianity for people who aren't Christians, it only makes sense to address this head on. So let's talk about Christians who act unchristian. One of the biggest complaints about Christianity is that Christians are too legalistic. What do we do with legalistic Christians? Now, simply put, legalism is when people put a bunch of do's and don'ts on other people in the name of God, when God did not command those do's and don'ts. At the very heart of legalism is shame. It draws lines in the sand between spiritual and unspiritual people. But it doesn't stop there. It draws another set of lines between spiritual and more spiritual people, and another set of lines between more spiritual and very spiritual people. It seems like for legalism, it's all about comparison and being better than someone else. The ultimate goal of legalism is to earn the favor of God by being very, very good. And if that doesn't work, you can always settle for just having an air of superiority over those who you deem less spiritual. And what about all of the people at the bottom? What about all of those unspiritual people? Well, they're weighed down with guilt and with shame and just this feeling of inadequacy, this deep feeling that nothing that they do is ever enough. A telltale sign of a legalistic person is that their entire identity seems to be based on what they don't do rather than what they do. Sadly, most of us have probably encountered one or two legalistic Christians in our life. Now, here's something that may surprise you. Legalistic people ticked Jesus off. See, when Jesus walked the earth, there was a group of religious leaders known as the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. And they prided themselves on following the rules of the Hebrew scriptures to a T. In fact, they actually took the scriptures, what we now refer to as the Old Testament. They took the scriptures, they took God's inspired word, full of story, full of narrative, full of life, and they lifted all of the do's and the don'ts out of there. They figured out that there were exactly 248 commands and 365 prohibitions. And they made it their life's goal to follow them to the letter, literally. But they ran into a problem. They kept breaking the law. And so they decided that the best thing to do was to put rules around the rules to keep them from breaking the rules. They ended up coming up with 1,500 more laws to keep them from breaking the original 613 laws. And this oral tradition was finally written down, and it was called the Mishnah. But even that wasn't enough. Because legalism is based on comparison and shame. It wasn't good enough anymore just not to break the law. If you broke the Mishnah, if you broke the laws around the laws, all of a sudden you were less spiritual than someone else. And you would feel ashamed. And so what was their solution to this problem? Well, clearly the solution was to add more laws. They ended up putting more rules around the rules that they put around the rules to keep from breaking the rules. And so how did this work out for them? How did this pan out? Well, the scriptures taught that you couldn't take the Lord's name in vain. And so they decided that the best solution to keep from breaking this particular law was just not to speak the Lord's name at all. If you didn't speak the Lord's name, how could you take it in vain? In order to avoid adultery, anytime they passed a woman in the street, they would put their head down. In fact, the most devout Pharisees actually earned the title Bleeding Pharisee because they would bump into walls and cause their heads to bleed. And they would wear that like a badge of honor. The Old Testament stipulated that the Sabbath was a day of rest. And so after much debate, the Pharisees decided that the exact amount of steps were that you could take before it was considered work. And they didn't even have a Fitbit to help them out. And so when Jesus saw this out-of-control legalism, he gave them a scathing rebuke. He said this, he says, "What sorrow also awaits you experts of the religious law? For you crush people with unbearable religious demands, and you never lift a finger to lift the burden." Legalism crushes the soul instead of freeing it. It brings death instead of life. So it's not that Jesus doesn't care about rules. He's not going to shy away from telling you what is right and what is wrong. is that Jesus is far more concerned about the intent or the spirit of the law than the letter of the law. James Emery White says this very clearly. He says, following Jesus is not about what you do. Following Jesus is not about what you do, but who you are. Who you are. Another way to put that would be to say that Christianity is not about behavior modification, but life transformation. And so if you hate legalism this morning, hear me, if you hate legalism, that's a good thing. Jesus does too. Legalism is more of a sign of our human condition than it is a way of Jesus' life. Listen to the words that people spoke to people who were burdened and crushed with all of these religious laws. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and my burden I give you is light. So was Jesus for or against legalism? Against. Big time. So next time you see a Christian being legalistic, know that that is not authentic Christian faith being lived out. Wherever there is religion, any religion, there will always be legalistic people. And so don't let them stop you from pursuing a life-giving relationship with Jesus. Now, what about judgmental Christians? Right? I'm willing to bet that you may have met one of these. We all know the type. They're always looking down their nose at others. And this reminds me of a joke. When I was a kid, somebody was being judgmental one time. And a friend of mine said to them, if you stick your nose up any higher, you're going to drown when it rains. So maybe, you know, say that next time someone's judging you, or don't. But you can do without what you will. Judgmental people believe that they are morally and spiritually better than everybody else. They're quick to point out the flaws in others, but they're completely blind to their own faults, which, by the way, are usually glaringly obvious to everyone else. Judgmental people aren't quick to give mercy or forgiveness. When you make a mistake or you get into trouble, instead of extending compassion or mercy or grace, they're the first to say, well, that's what you get. You should have known better. I told you so. It's so sad when we encounter Christians that are judgmental, because that is the furthest thing from the message of Jesus. Here's what Jesus said about judging others. Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. See, Jesus didn't sugarcoat it or skirt the issue. You know, it's hard to find a loophole in that command that clear. Do not judge. And what's more, we get to decide how severely we get judged. If we are quick to point the finger, if we are quick to blame, if we're quick to point out the faults in others, we should expect to receive the same amount of grace from others, the same amount of lenience from others. Now, just for fun, listen to Jesus, these words that were spoken about Jesus in John chapter 3. In John 3:17, it says this, God sent his Son into the world not to judge the world, but to save the world through him. Now, this doesn't mean that Jesus isn't going to tell us if we're going down the wrong path. He just doesn't play the shame game. See, often when we say, don't judge me, you can't judge me, what we're really saying is, you can't tell me that anything that I do or say is wrong, ever, for any reason, period. But in fact, sometimes the most compassionate, caring thing that you can do as a friend is to tell someone that they're making a mistake, to tell someone that they're heading down a dangerous road. But that's a little bit different than blanket statements. It's a little bit different than a Facebook soapbox. That's a little bit different than a condescending look. So once again, we have to ask ourselves, was Jesus for or against judgmentalism? And the answer again is against. Jesus could not stand for it. And let me be the first to say, I'm sorry if you've encountered judgmental Christians. They can really leave a wake of pain and hurt behind them. But just know that that is not what Jesus is like. He didn't come to judge. He came to save. The next one is a fun one. Hypocritical Christians. We all know the type. They act super spiritual. They go to church on Sunday. They volunteer even. But come Monday morning, they swear like a sailor. They're rude. They're lousy tippers. And they can party with the worst of them. They pay lip service to God in one breath and live like hell the rest of the week. Have you ever seen these masks before? These are the masks of comedy and tragedy in ancient Greece. And actors would wear these masks in order to hide their faces. In those days, all the actors were men. And so that meant that both male and female roles were played by men. And so they would put on these masks in order to act and play whatever role that they needed to play. And did you know that the Greek name for one of those actors literally meant behind the mask? And that word in Greek is Hippocrates, which is, of course, where we get the English word hypocrite. Now, Jesus was a master teacher, and he took hold of this image, and he used this language in a way that no one else had used it before. He used it to talk about people who were spiritual actors. Just listen to Jesus' words to the religious leaders and the teachers of the law. These are the legalistic ones who had made the laws around the laws around the laws. And this is what he says. He says, "Hypocrites, for you are so careful to clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are filthy, full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first wash the inside of the cup and the dish, then the outside will become clean too. What sorrow awaits you, teachers of the religious law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled on the inside with dead people's bones and all sorts of impurity. Outwardly, you look like righteous people, but inwardly, your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness." Now, Jesus went on for a while, but I think you get the picture. If hypocrisy is something that you hate, let it drive you to Jesus, not away from Jesus. Because when someone, no matter how spiritual they appear, no matter how good they look, when they're acting like a hypocrite, they are very, very far from where Jesus intends for them to be. Now here's the rub. Here's where I make you feel a little bit uncomfortable and I get under your skin a little bit. All of us have a little hypocrite inside of us. We all like to pretend that we're better people than we are. We all like to pretend that we're a little bit more spiritual than we are. I'm just being honest. And the key is to recognize the hypocrisy in our hearts. And when we recognize it, Jesus can do something with it. Now, having said all of this, I think it's very important that you understand what hypocrisy is not. Okay? Hypocrisy isn't making mistakes. It isn't falling short. It isn't losing your temper when you know that you should have remained calm. It's not being dishonest when you know that you should have been honest. Hypocrisy is not falling short of being perfect. Hypocrisy is acting like you are perfect when you're not. James Emery White helps put this into perspective. He says, "The truth is that the opposite of hypocrisy is not perfection. The opposite of hypocrisy is spiritual authenticity." And this means that when you fail, because I hate to be the one to tell you this, you will. I fail thousands of times a day. But when you fail, own up to it. Come to God and whoever else you need to and make it right. Humble yourself. And please understand me. This is not a shame thing. Jesus is not into the shame game. This is about being humble. This is about taking off the mask, stopping the pretending, and just being honest with yourself and with God. And when we are honest, when we finally take off the mask and we come to God as we are, we find so much grace and so much help when we need it the most. So is Jesus for or against hypocrisy? Unequivocally, without question, against. Intolerant Christians. This is a big one. By now, I'm hoping that you're saying, okay, I get it. I get it. Just because people are Christians or just because they claim to be Christians, sometimes they might be legalistic or judgmental or hypocritical. But that actually doesn't have anything to do with Jesus at all. That's actually more of a result of their own personality and their own sinfulness. Everyone is on their own journey and they're carrying their own stuff. I get that that doesn't have anything to do with Jesus. But what about tolerance? Because I've heard that Christians aren't very tolerant about other beliefs or lifestyles. And that's a really, really good, thoughtful question. Tolerance is the unquestionable virtue of our culture. If someone says to you, you're being intolerant, that's it. Conversation is over. It's done. You've been called out. There's nothing that you can say to that. Tolerance is probably the number one value or one of the number one values in our culture. And Christians certainly get a lot of bad press for being intolerant. Now, let me be clear right off the bat. Tolerance is a great thing. The problem is that the way tolerance is defined in our culture is very, very narrow. You see, if you ask a person what the definition of tolerance is, they would probably say something like being accepting of people regardless of what they believe or where they come from or how they behave. And to that definition, the Christian faith would wholeheartedly agree. But if you press people a little bit further, you'll find out that what they really mean is affirming all ideas, lifestyles, and beliefs as equally valid, equally true, and equally right. And this is where the friction starts, because Christianity can't affirm that belief. Now, I'm going to speak personally here, but I'm just not tolerant in that way. And I'm kind of putting myself out here a little bit, but I'm going to hazard a guess that you're not that way either. Let's break down the definition of tolerance a little bit. There are three basic types of tolerance that our pop culture just kind of lumps into one. There's legal tolerance, social tolerance, and intellectual tolerance. Legal tolerance is your basic right as a human being to believe what you want to believe without being penalized or thrown into prison for it. Christianity is a huge advocate for legal tolerance. I, for one, am really happy that I can stand here on a Sunday morning and talk about my faith in Jesus with all of you and not have to worry about being thrown into prison for it. I am very thankful that we live in a country that allows legal tolerance of religion. The second kind of tolerance is social tolerance. This is when you accept someone regardless of who they are, what they believe, or how they behave. Jesus was a huge advocate for social tolerance. Jesus befriended people that you or I would probably would just be absolutely horrified to be associated with. In fact, Jesus earned the name Friend of Sinners, and that name was not meant as a compliment. That name was meant as a rebuke on his character. But Jesus wore it like a badge of honor, because Jesus saw the value and the worth in the people that society had pushed to the side. Jesus was a huge fan of social tolerance. And authentic followers of Jesus are also accepting of others, no matter what they believe, no matter how they behave, no matter where they come from. We are taught by Jesus to love everyone unconditionally. Now, the third type of tolerance is where Christianity takes a little bit of an issue. Intellectual tolerance is basically the belief that all ideas, religions, and lifestyles are equally valid, equally good, and equally true. And I'm going to go back out on that limb here. And I'm willing to bet that this is the exact area that you probably take issue with as well. There's a story about a gang member who came to believe in Jesus. And on his fingers, on one hand, he had the F word. And then on the other hand, he had Y-O-U. And this gang member came to believe in Jesus. And he was so excited and so passionate about his faith that he would sit in the front row of church every single Sunday. And when worship was on, he would stand up and he would raise his hands high. And everyone sitting behind him, you know, Sister Bertha, better than you, and all the rest would see what was written on his fingers very clearly. Now, here's the thing. Whether this story is true or urban legend, I don't really know, but it illustrates the point that I'm trying to make. The man had the legal right to get that tattooed on his fingers. He had every right to do that. No one could stop him. He was clearly accepted by the church long before he ever believed in Jesus. Otherwise, there's no way he would have made it that far. If he wasn't accepted, if he wasn't loved, if he wasn't cared for before he had his life together, there was no way that he would be sitting on the front row of that church. So socially, the church expressed a great amount of tolerance and love and acceptance. But chances are pretty good that that man probably regretted getting that printed on his fingers in the first place. It may not have been the best life choice. And so here's the point. The point is that I don't believe that everything is right. There's a good and a bad, a right and a wrong, a true and a false, a smart and a dumb. And regardless of what people say, that is how most people live their lives. Pastor Alexis, do you want to come on up? See, before Christians were ever called by that name, before Christians were ever called Christians, they were first known as followers of the way. And it's a reference to Jesus' self-disclosing statement to his disciples. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me." See, Jesus calls all people, regardless of what they believe, regardless of how they've lived their life, regardless of where they've come from, Jesus calls all people, including you and me, to lay down their way for his way. To lay down their lifestyles in order to walk in the life-giving, life-transforming path that he has laid before us. And this is why Christianity claims that the only way to God is through Jesus. And to believe in him is to live the Jesus way and to die to my way. And so please hear me. If you have been hurt, if you have been burned, if you have been disillusioned by people who are Christians, don't let them keep you from Jesus. In him is life, and life in all of its fullness. And I'll be the first to say that we make mistakes. We aren't perfect. We will fail you. But he never will. You know, I'm deeply sorry that we don't always do a good job of representing our Lord. We don't always look like Jesus in our everyday lives. But that's kind of the point. It's kind of the point is that God wants to transform you. He wants to take you from the way that you're living life right now. And he wants to show you a better way. Because he is the way. And so if you want to judge Christianity, judge it by Jesus. Judge it by the person who is the way. And now, I don't know where you're at this morning when you're on your faith journey. But I want to ask you a very simple question, and I don't mean this in an offensive way. I don't mean this in a rude way. I mean this with all the love in my heart, all the concern in my heart. Is your way of living working? Is the way that you live life right now bringing you fulfillment Is it bringing you joy? Is it bringing you peace? Is it bringing you hope? Do you find that you have more love in your heart for others or less? Is your way of living working? Or is it maybe time to try the Jesus way? See, before we get into all kinds of arguments about where Jesus drew the lines on different issues, doesn't it make more sense to figure out who Jesus is? If he really is the Son of God? If he really does love you? If he really does care about you? Isn't that the bigger question here? So I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you to live the Jesus way, to die to your old life, and to rise again on the path that Jesus has for you, a path that leads into the future full of life and hope and peace and joy and love. Would you pray with me? If you're watching this morning and you say, you know what, Joe, I want to live that life. I want to follow Jesus. The way I'm living my life isn't working out, and I want to follow Jesus. Would you just repeat this prayer after me? Dear Heavenly Father, I believe in Jesus. I believe that he is the way, that he is the truth, that he is the only way to life. And I die to my way of living. And I ask that you would resurrect me, make me brand new to his way of living. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. Friends, if you prayed that prayer for the very first time, I would love to hear from you. There's going to be a link in the comment section, a way for you to get a hold of me. And I'd love to hear your story, love to connect with you.